Welcome to the Lizzie and Events podcast, and today we've got the ever popular Dr. Don Harradine. Welcome, Dr. Don.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me along again.
Super. And the Money Talks podcasts have become extremely popular, and many people have downloaded them and put them onto their phones and tablets and laptops, etc. So quite a success we have, or you have, on your hands here. Are you pleased?
Incredibly pleased, and thank you for your hard work, Ian, of directing and editing, because as you know better than I, if anything sounds half decent, it's not down to the subject necessarily, it's down to how it's put together. So thank you very much indeed.
I think you're being a little bit humble there, but there we go. Right, today we have the third part in the how, why, and now we've got the where, and a really interesting, superb half an hour or so with Dr. Don, and I'm going to just say, Don, please carry on.
Thank you very much. Where we're going today is where. And so what we're going to be looking at is what's the direction of your goods, services, and businesses. So we've looked at the other aspects of it, the why, the how. So where is your business going to be going? And I think it's worth just thinking through that whatever you think, oh, my business is stable, my business will carry on as exactly as it is, and nothing will happen. And I think that is one of the great misnomers. If you look at any business that's not tried to understand where it should be going, you'll find that those businesses eventually petrify and die. And I'm reminded of a story that was used by a strategist whose lecture I attended many years ago, which is worth pondering. And it's the story is simple. And if you imagine yourself in the jungle and the sun comes up in the morning, what do you know? Well, what you know is whether you're an antelope, a zebra, a lion, or a coyote, that one thing you've got to do is eat. And the next thing you got to know is that if you're going to not be eaten, or if you're going to try and find something to eat, everybody, once that sun comes up, has to run as fast as they can. And I think that says everything about business today. Whatever you're doing, you've got to be ready to look out at what's happening, and you've got to be ready to move in any direction that the circumstances dictate. So once that sun is up, run. Now, saying all of that, I want you to start to think about a few general ideas. And the first is, when you're looking at which direction your business should go, I want to suggest three concepts to you. And the first concept is acceptable, then suitable, and then feasible. So acceptability, suitability, and feasibility. So whatever you decide with your business, you have to have a think and say, is the change that I'm looking at, and that change could be do nothing, is that acceptable to me? Is that acceptable to the stakeholders of my business? Is that acceptable to my suppliers? Is that going to be acceptable to my customers? And you might also want to start to think about your competitors, because whatever actions you take doesn't only affect you, but those that you're in competition with. And I'm going to be talking a little bit about competition in general a little bit later. But this idea of upsetting your competitors, is that something you want to do? So if you decide that your strategy may well be a low-cost strategy, which may then be a low-price strategy, if that's what you're going to do, could that start off a price war with all your competitors? And if it does start off a price war, It drives everybody's margin down, or contribution, as we were talking about in the last podcast. And if you drive that down, everyone is making less money. And that may well mean that some may go out of business, which might be ideal for you, but it also might start to mean that you've ruined the market for everybody. So this idea is acceptable. Is it acceptable in terms of ethics, business ethics? Is that the way you want to be seen, whatever that change being? How does it change the perception of you and your business? So put it through that filter. Is it acceptable? And the second, suitability. Is the change that you're proposing, is it suitable? So does it take advantage of the environment that you're in? Does it make sense there? Is it suitable in terms of the resources you've got? So that idea of being suitable to all of those things, does it make sense? Might be a different way of looking at it. And then the last, but by no means least, and I think all I have to do is to point to certain actions of maybe our government in terms of the crisis that we're currently experiencing, and that is feasibility. Can you actually do what you're suggesting? Now, I know many business people that have ideas about how they're going to develop their business, but are they practical? Can they actually do them? And so the very last test that you put whatever change that you want is this idea of, is it actually feasible? Can you actually do it? Have you got the resources? Have you, and I mean by resources, not only financial, which is what most people mean, but have you got it in terms of the quality of the staff that you have? Have you got the energy to actually do that personally? So, acceptability, suitability, and feasibility. Whatever you decide to do with your business, run it through those filters first. And they not necessarily give you the right answers all the time, but at least they make you step back for a moment and just think about what you're doing. Now, they're the tests. I'd like you now to think about the goods and services that you have. And I'm going to gently take you through something which is often referred to as the Boston Matrix. Usually, if you see this written down, it's done in the form of a square made up of four squares. But as it's a podcast, it's a little bit difficult to see that. So I'll gently take you through it. Now, it's called the Boston Matrix because it was developed by a group of academics that formed a consultancy company. And the company is called the Boston Consulting Group. And most of the academics that eventually fed into this came from Harvard in the United States. And you may have heard the name of the Boston Consulting Group recently because they was involved in advising the government for, I think it was several thousand pounds a day for their consultancy services. Obviously, every penny incredibly well spent. Now, their matrix. Four parts to the matrix, and it's an indication of how you ought to view your goods and services. Now, you should always have some product or service which is going to keep earning you money. And so, and you'll know what it is if you have a quick look at what you do. This is that thing that perhaps was the first service that got you noticed, or the thing that you just do every day that brings in the bulk of your money one way or another. And that's often referred to, quite unflatteringly, as the cash cow. So that's the thing that you keep doing. May not be earning you a fortune, but it keeps everything ticking over. And what you need to be aware is that cash cow, you need to keep looking after it. You need to make sure it's as healthy as possible. But you need to also to understand that one day you may have to replace it. Now, when you think about replacing, this brings us on to two of the other different types of product or services you ought to consider in your portfolio of whatever it is that you're doing. You might want to consider that you always ought to have something which you're trying out, a new product or service of some sort. And this is often referred to as the problem child. Why? Because you have to look after it. You have to nurture it. You have to bring it on. Perhaps the problem child won't fully make it to maturity, and therefore it won't succeed. So what you need to consider is you always need something that you're trying out, some service or product that is new to you, and but make sure it fits in generally with the general ethos of what you're trying to do. So always have that. You may well have as well what's often referred to as a rising star, or a product which is, it's past that initial setup stage and it's gently growing itself. And that's your rising star. And eventually your rising star will turn itself into a cash cow. But generally a rising star is something that will, for a while, it will be ahead of the competition, may generate quite large profits. So understand that all of these things are temporary. So you have a problem child, your new product, you have your rising star, a more of an established new product, you have your cash cow, which is something which is it's at its peak perhaps and maybe slightly on its way out, but it's still earning you good money. You also have to be aware that there may be some things that you do, and this is a hard decision for many people in business. There may be something which is often referred to as a dog. And a dog, and I apologize for the terminology, but a dog is something that probably passed its best. And it may be something that you have to consider jettisoning from your portfolio of goods and services. So once upon a time, it may have been your rising star. It may have been your cash cow, but now perhaps you're keeping it going for sentimentality. So be aware that there are some things that you may just have to say, that's got to go. Now, I'll give you a very quick case study, which I think helps to illustrate these. One of the areas, and I picked this one because of what's happening currently, and I'll talk about the drugs industry and drugs in terms of pharmaceuticals, not necessarily street corner drugs. Now, what we have here is the key to being a successful pharmaceutical company is that you always need your next drug. You always need your next product, because what happens, the new products, they get replicated by other companies, and also the limitation on the only you being able to produce those drugs runs out quite quickly. And so all the time, if you're going to be a successful drug company, you need to be going through that cycle. You need to always have your new product. You always need to have your rising star. You always need to have your cash cow. But then you're going to have other products which are, they've been replicated by everybody else. They're selling it far cheaper than perhaps even you can make it. So you need to get rid of that. And you will often see companies, particularly pharmaceutical companies, that will get themselves into real trouble. And an example locally is Boots Pharmaceuticals, which had all its hopes based on one particular drug, which actually failed its final steps in safety. And it failed those steps. And because the company couldn't afford to get to bring out a new drug or start the process of developing something else, it really put the company in financial difficulty. And it was in so much trouble because of that failure of that one drug that it needed to get somebody else to pump money into the company so that it could survive to get it through that particular cycle. So what I'm trying to say to you is, you're not going to get into that type of trouble necessarily that quickly, but you need to be aware that when we start to talk about the where, we start to need to understand where we're going with regards to our products in terms of goods and services. So just be aware of that. Now, one of the things that is incredibly important is to understand the general direction of your strategy or your generic strategy. And interestingly enough, I've just been doing some work advising a charity, quite a large charity, on what should be its strategic direction. And there are three basic strategic directions. So whatever your business is, whether it's a big healthcare organization, whether it's a charity, whether it's your own small business or whatever it is, whatever size of that business, generally, you have three, perhaps four options as to what that strategic direction could be. And I'll quickly go through each of those for you, and you can decide perhaps where you think you are and maybe where you think that your business may want to go. So the first is cost leadership. And cost leadership is probably not the best term for it. You might want to look at that in terms of price leadership. Now, cost leadership is saying that your business gets its advantage over its competitors by being low cost. So no one else will actually do what you do for a lower cost. And that gives you an advantage because if you are low cost, and this is not always the case, but if you are low cost, the chances are you will be low price. And so by being low price, you can undercut your competitors. Now, what that means is that you are always seen as that low cost, low price. It may well be that you lose out on certain customers because they think what you're doing can't be any good because you're low cost. Always a thought. There's a lovely phrase, goods of ostentation, where people will only buy certain things because they perceive that because they cost a lot, they must be better. And so if you're in a business where that could be the case, then being low price could actually work against you. So that's something that you need to be constantly aware of. If you want to go down that route, always be aware that if you do that, those in competition with you will start to lower their prices too. And if they start to lower their prices, you can end up getting yourself in a price war. And generally, price wars don't end up well for everybody. Those that survive, pretty much okay. But those that don't, there's a problem. So I think you can see that. The second strategic approach you can take is what's often referred to as differentiation. Now, differentiation is you may be roughly the same sort of price and cost base as everybody else, but what you've done is you've found a way where you can actually differentiate your product from other people. So everybody is doing pretty much the same type of thing, but you find a way to say, hang on a moment, my product is different from others. And so you emphasize that difference to try to encourage people to come to you as opposed to anybody else. So a business that at the time quite aware of is the teaching of Tai Chi and internal health arts. Now, there are lots and lots of people doing that. How do you differentiate yourself? Or do you say, well, what I do is I teach particular types of Qigong, which nobody else teaches. And so if you want to learn those, you need to come to me. If you want to learn Tai Chi, there are lots of people you can go from. But if you want certain specialist things, you come here. So always be aware of how you do that. So make sure you differentiate your product and then make sure that all your advertising and selling is to that. Now, the truth of this is, as you're probably ahead of me here, you've worked out that maybe the differences aren't that real physically, but what they are is they are perceptions. So what you do is you change perceptions of what you do, which means that that's all about promotion. If you're selling lots of different types of products on your store, what you may want to do is to say, hang on a second, my products are similar to everybody else's, but maybe the way that I source my products more ethically than other people means that I differentiate what I do because I'm more ethical, or my products are ethically sourced. And so I tap into that particular type of differentiation. Perhaps when you're providing readings for people, you provide your readings perhaps in a slightly different way to how most people do it. You differentiate the way you look. You differentiate the way that you're perceived by people coming along to see what you do. So that's differentiation. And the final general strategy that you can take, or direction, or place where you're going to, is you focus, or you become a niche. And this is a very interesting one, because what you do is you say in your advertising and your promotion, and indeed in what you actually do, that there is nobody else that does this. If you want this particular thing, you can't find it anywhere else, and I'm that focused product. I'm that niche. You can't find it anywhere else. Now, what does that mean? Well, what it means is that you're one of a kind, and that probably means that you can charge more than anybody else for that. And that is a pretty good position to be in. Although you have to realize that because you're a niche and you're very highly concentrated on what you do, then the market for that is not going to be that great, probably. Now, with all of these, what you need to understand is that generally the advantage you get for going in that direction, and this brings us back to the African plains, that everybody is going to be watching what's happening and everybody is going to start running. So once you adopt one of these, what you'll find is people will see if you're working well or not, or whether it's successful. And if it's working well and it's successful, people are going to start to copy you. They'll imitate you. Your differentiated focus, your differentiation, people will look at that and say, hang on, that's working quite well. I wonder if I can differentiate that in the same way, which then means that the amount of your differentiation that's making you money is reduced. If you are a focus, what you may well find is that certain people will see what you're doing and they'll start to copy that niche. And so you'll start to find that your advantage will go away, which means that this is a constant job. This is not something you do once. This is something that you keep doing all of the time. So that's an important aspect. Now, that brings us on to what's often referred to as game theory. Now, game theory comes from, as you've worked out, playing games and sports. And there's one or two things that I would like to bring out from that. The first point is, I've already alluded to, that is, no advantage is temporary. Once somebody's seen you do something, it works, you'll get copied. And so you have to be aware that anything you do won't last forever. You need to be constantly reviewing. Now, one thing that you might want to consider in game theory is what's often referred to as the prisoner's dilemma. And the prisoner's dilemma is, again, a nice, simple story. If you and your friend decide to go and rob a bank, not an ethical business, obviously, but if you were to do that, you rob the bank, you hid the money, and the police bring both of you in, what do you know? Well, what you know is if you both keep quiet, chances are you'll get away with it and you can go and find the money and live your life on the Paradise Island or whatever it is that you aspire to. But do you trust your friend to keep quiet? Does he think, or she, that you're likely to be the one that spills the beans? And if you were to spill the beans, chances are you'll get away with a less severe sentence. So, do you trust the person in the other cell being questioned by the police to keep quiet? Does the person in the other cell trust you to be quiet? What's likely to happen? Well, what's likely to happen is that one of you is going to give in. And game theory would suggest that the person that gives in first is the one that gets the best advantage. Human nature, nothing more, nothing less. And so this is the same in business. If we're all going along and everything is going well and everybody is making a good living out of everything, do you trust everybody else to keep that status quo? Or will one day one person decide to say, hang on, I'm going to do this because this is going to give me an advantage, which means that it puts everybody else that I've been working closely with at a disadvantage? So you always have to be aware of that. I did a series of lectures on strategy for a large consulting firm in London. And they'd brought people from all over the country for this series of lectures. And I did this. And then we looked at the different things that people were doing. And the people that were there were all in the same industry. And during the course of the program, they all started to realize, after I'd done this part of the lecture, that they were all in competition for each other. And if one of them was to start poaching the work of the others, that would give them the advantage in that they could then expand their business at the expense of others and do what they did more cheaply to give them a cost advantage so that they could make more profit. And they all realized this at the same time. And it was an interesting dynamic for the rest of the week that I was there, as how you could see them starting to think, my goodness, when we get back to the office, will one of these do that? Which, or should I be the first one to do it? And unfortunately, I'd caused a problem. But it was something that probably would have happened anyway. Now, the other point on game theory I'd like to suggest to you is with regards to nothing will be the same forever, which I've alluded to, but also what you might want to think about is, should I change the rules of the game? And that's an interesting one. Because what you may decide is that everyone is doing things like this, but perhaps what I ought to do is do this, and that changes how everybody looks at what we're doing. And I'll give you an example here that relates to events. Now, one of the things I was doing some work with a few organizations, and they were all pretty much priced the same. They all had pretty much the same sort of capacity. But one of them realized that they had a massive car park. And what was restricting all of the other organizations was that they couldn't actually get people to the venue because of the car parking. And so what the smart person did with the big car park, he changed the rules. Because what he said was, hang on a second, we've got this massive car park. What about if we advertise what we do to say, we're doing all of this the same as everybody else, but we've got a massive car park and it's free. Now that changed the dynamic of that particular local business environment and gave this other business a massive advantage. So where everyone was competing on prices for what they were doing, everyone was competing on the same sort of products, this one changed the game and said, hang on, what about if I make it free car parking, massive car park, turn up here, it's a lot easier. So they changed the terms of engagement, which is something that perhaps might be useful to your business. Now, I'd like to finish this podcast by pulling something together to try and look at the things we've looked at several of the podcasts over the course of the last few weeks or whatever the time scale is that you've listened to them in. And I tried to come up with a model, which I think you may find useful. And the model I want to suggest to you is one that looks at all of the different aspects of your business and the important points to take into account. And I would suggest to you that something that does that is the basic five-pointed star, pentagram, or however you want to look at it. Pentagram is quite nice because that's made up of a continuous line that pulls all of the different parts together. Everything is connected in a pentagram. You have 5 points and then everything connected together. And I'd like you to consider the basic points of the pentagram. They take into account the characteristics of the different elements, which you'll often see in lots of spheres of study. So I'd like you to consider that one point of the star is earth, the other point is water, the other is air, the other is fire, and the other is ether, or that above all of the others. So a five-pointed star with earth, water, fire, and air, and ether. You can have it any way up you want. You can have it change them around if you want to different points, but that doesn't matter. The important point is that all of these are important points and all of them are connected together. You need them all working together in your business. So I'll start off with earth. Now, earth is that thing that grounds your business. It makes it possible. It's the thing that makes it grow. It's where things grow out of. And so what I'd like you to consider is that earth is profit. Now, no business can grow without profit. I've seen people try it, but it doesn't work, trust me. Now, you can get away with a lack of profit in the short term, but certainly medium to long term, you need your business to be making a profit. Even if it's very small, you cannot exist without that. So the first part is earth. You need to be making profits. The next element I would suggest that may be useful is water. And this is partly what we've been looking at today, is that you need to have a constant flow of new ideas. You need to be innovating all of the time. Whatever it is you do, as the sun comes up over that over that water hole in the desert, you need to be making sure that everybody is running. So this idea of water, constant flow of new ideas, that's what you need in your business. Next, I would suggest is air. And air we breathe in and out. And you can go a long time without food, but with air, you die quickly. And I'd like to suggest that in terms of business, air is cash. You can get away without making profits for a while, but without having a successful cash flow, as we talked about in earlier podcasts, without the cash coming in and out, That is what you breathe, cash in and out. And without cash flow, your business will die quickly. As I've said before, most businesses will survive on little profit, but no business can survive if the cash flow doesn't work. The penultimate point on your star is fire. And we touched upon this last time. Fire is your passion for your business, your willingness to do what is needed. That work, you need that passion, you need that fire in you to keep going. When things are bad, when things are not looking good, you need that passion for what you're doing just to keep yourself driving forward. And I would suggest that as things are now, most businesses are just surviving on willpower and that passion. And it will drive them through. It will get them through. So that's fire. So earth, water, air, and fire. And the last is ether, or that thing above everything else, that place where all of the other elements can exist, that space, the top of the mountain where you look down on everything. And this is important. This is the plateau that you need to go to when you run your business every now and then, to look long term, to develop your strategy, to look for the innovations in what you're doing, to examine what's happening in the market that you live in, to see what's going on. It's your time when you take a step back or a step up and you look long term, come up with your plans. The old adage, if you don't plan, you plan to fail. And that is so, so true. And one of the, and I'll just leave you with this final point on that. I've heard many managers and many people running their businesses saying, I haven't got time to plan. We're in the middle of a crisis. I can't plan now. And what I would suggest is, if things are bad, that's the time where you need to plan. That's the time where you need to go up to the top of the mountain and have a look around and decide what really should be done. So that's the important key thing. Make sure you have time to look around and see what's happening. So your five-pointed star, earth, you need to be making profits. Water, you need a constant flow of ideas. Fire, you need that passion to keep going. Air, that's your cash flow. You need the cash to be constantly coming in and out to keep everything working. And that final point, you need to take time out to plan. So I hope you found that useful in some way. And that's the end of this podcast, Ian, if that's okay.
Yes, absolutely captivating, totally captivating. I was hanging on to every second of it, making my personal notes, which I will use to my own advantage. And I should point out that I actually do that. I mean, the things that I've learned from yourself over the last 3 weeks of recording have been introduced, some of them have been introduced into Liz and I's business plan. So I think that you should always have this fantastic idea of development, planning, and taking on other people's ideas. I recently watched a fabulous podcast, and visual podcast, what they call video blogs, aren't they? And I can't for the life of remember. I'll try and sort it out and put it onto the page where this podcast will be. And I listened to this man, and he said something that was fascinating. He said, look, one of the things that many people get wrong is they're not prepared to listen or actively encourage criticism, you know, because if you listen to it, you can take advantage of it. And I thought, that's a really important thought. And I have a criticism book. I really have a criticism book. And anything that comes to me that is critique, I always write it down and I thrive on it. And I always say, thank you very much for that piece of information, and I adapt. But the other thing that he spoke about was there were many, many leaders of industry, self-made men, who were asked what was the greatest asset to any big business or any business that they built. And of course, you would have thought cash flow, money, access to money, investment would have been the primary answers. And everybody, all of them, had one word: creativity. You know, the ideas. And this whole podcast is so much involved with that word of creativity. It's all about thinking, because people miss the point, I believe, with business. They think it's money all the time. To me, what you do with a business is you go to a fine accountant and you listen to what they have to say. They will help you on tax situations. They will guide you. But a good accountant will never but ever say, oh, well, this is what you should be doing with your business. I've got another client who does this. They'll never do that. And if you have fantastic advice that you can use to your advantage, then you can get on with your business. People do not delegate. They don't take on what other people are doing. And all of the things that you've spoken about here, particularly about, you know, what other people will take from your business, they will copy your plan and they'll do so. But there is an Achilles heel to that, is that sometimes they'll copy the plan because you've got such a great idea and fail to realize that they damage a business that they might have worked hard at for many, many years, and they're already established and there is no need to do so because it evidences weakness. And I always think if people are following you and following what you're doing, it's evidence that they're frightened of what you're doing and they feel they've got to follow it through. And I think that's an important point to consider. I mean, I remember the old thing about bandwagon, isn't it? If you're trying to jump on the bandwagon, it's too late. It's gone out of the, it's out on the road.
Absolutely right. Yeah.
Can I, one final thing, I would say that the five-pointed star symbol, I'll make sure that that goes up on the podcast, and I'll make sure that it's PDF so it's downloadable so people can actually download it, because it's absolutely fantastic. And I might may speak to you later in the week and see if we can add some more words to the each point, and then that will make the downloadable symbol quite effective for people to use. On saying that, though, there's plenty of information there. But one thing I would like to add to it about the word profit: the greatest but greatest lesson that I have ever been taught came to me by somebody, and only in the last 12 or 13 years, because prior to that I'd had businesses and whatever, and I they weren't run properly. Let's be absolutely clear, they weren't run properly. They had phenomenal potential, but they weren't run properly, and that firmly stands with the person who's sitting in this seat, me. But the major lesson that I was told by somebody who is a consummate businessman, very, very wealthy guy, lovely, lovely man, and he has this power that very few people have. He gives his advice freely, like yourself, because that's powerful to do. And he said this: your mistake that you have always made is the small businessman's Achilles heel. He said, what you do is you believe that profit is your wages. The moment that you realize that profit is an excess after every single penny is accounted for, then your business will thrive. Your wages must be in the overheads. They can't be anywhere else. It's a waste of time saying, I'm running this business and whatever I make, that profit is mine. If you do that, you will fail every single time. It doesn't make any difference whether it's a week, a month, a year, or a decade. That idea will make you fail every time. Yeah. And I have to sadly say that we are now evidenced that my friend who gave me this advice is so right, because there are many, many, many thousands of businesses in the UK and businesses in Europe and across the world who are literally hanging on by the most fragile of threads for survival at this moment in time. Because they have used their business as the cash cow.
Yeah.
They have used their business as a cash cow and not lived within the potential of the business to earn a profit. Now, nobody could have expected what has happened, but they will be absolutely maxed out on their credit cards, onto their overdraft facility right on the line. It's inevitable, Don. It's inevitable. And many people are there and they are really in a bad situation. Had they had a good surplus of cash in the bank, they would definitely have had to have used that blood of the business to keep it going, but they would be in a better position than excess borrowing and credit. And this is what's causing a major problem to so many people. How are they going to pay their credit off? Now, if I may just, and I would be value your opinion on this, businesses across this country are literally now going to be in terrible situation because of something that you're not going to even understand or agree with me. It is the fact that we have cheap money.
Yes.
When banks used to lend at 8 to 10%, and they used to, the percentage could go up to 12% if they thought you were high risk, the banks had a surplus of profit. For the last 15 years, I think, Don, it would be, when we've had these really low rates of 2 and 3 or 1% loans, etc., the banks now have no leeway. No. The houses on mortgages of 1%, it really means that the banks, they're in a terrible situation now because they can't put the interest rate up, because even a 2% raise on a mortgage could mean as much as, to some mortgages, could mean as much as 60, 70, 80 pounds per week. It would cripple them and take them away. So now we're in a dilemma that because of the way that business has been handled in Europe, UK, worldwide, on very, very, very low interest rates, the banks haven't got the money, so they're borrowing from government to support it, and then the banks are re-lending it back. It's an insane situation, but where this is the fragility of our economy, terrifying situation. So borrowing money on low interest rate, one, actually makes you borrow money, and two, actually means the money is pulled away from you as quickly as possible if you get yourself in trouble. Could you just comment a little bit on that? I know it's a bit convoluted, but it's important to understand.
Yeah, indeed. I think I would say what you've said really does resonate with me. Carol and myself, Carol, my wife, we are of that age where the first house we bought, we were paying something like, if my memory is correct, something like 15 to 17% interest on our mortgage. So that certainly, from a business point of view, has trained us that you got to really take care of what you, of what loans you take out, because you're absolutely correct, Ian. What you say is absolutely true. Interest rates, they come down, and when they come down, they're going to go up. And any business which we usually refer to as highly geared, and by a highly geared business is one that is highly dependent on loans to keep it going, those businesses are okay when they're making lots of profits. They're okay when interest rates are low, but you change either of those and the business immediately gets into trouble. So what you've said is absolutely spot on and fits in with financial theory perfectly. I'd also make the point that what we have now is completely unforeseen, a lot of it. But a business where somebody is constantly saying, hang on a second, I need to take that time and go up to the top of the mountain. I need to spend time looking round what's going on. I need to be doing that. I need to be understanding what's going, what's happening, not just locally, but internationally. I always, usually, I start off a talk on business strategy by saying, anybody that gets caught out by something that happens and says, I didn't expect that to happen, they're not being a strategist. Now, there are some things which are completely, you can't be aware of. If a meteorite or a meteor suddenly hits the earth, that's a problem. If we get a pandemic, that's something we couldn't have foreseen. But if you are running a business, you should always, always say, I need to be prepared for this happening, which I can foresee, that happening, which I can foresee, but there's always going to be something that's going to happen that I'm not ready for. And so that means you should always have that resilience built into your business, always. Now, the final point I would make in answer to Ian's points there is this term profit. Now, when we talk about profit, the difference between what we earn or the things we what we bring in and what we spend, I think that's the point Ian makes there is superb. That's the really important thing. What is it that we need to run our business? And what I would argue is it's not just what we need to buy in the goods and services and things that we sell. It's not just the overheads of the building that we work from, the staff that we pay or have to pay, the fixed costs that we have to pay, rent, rates, etc. Not even that part of the money that you want to put aside for your own use. It's more than that. It's what do you need long term for resilience? And every business should be putting away money into reserves so that they have that resilience when things go wrong, because they will go wrong. The very definition of unforeseen is things that you don't know is going to happen to you. So any business that runs without setting aside money for reserves, you know, you should be setting aside money for replacement of machinery. You should be setting money aside for replacement of things that go wrong. But you also need additional reserves that will be your cushion when things go unexpectedly wrong. Does that, hopefully that answers your points, Ian?
It does, Don, and perfect. I'm going to twist your arm publicly here. Could you come back to do another podcast where we can talk about damage limitation and how to present yourself to banks, accountants, and whatever, if things are not going well, if you're in an unstable situation? I think it would be a very beneficial podcast to run, particularly at this time, so that you start to really plan ahead. If you like, we're going to see, let's batten down the hatches. Let's start to assess exactly what you need to do now for survival. Look at your stock levels, look at the value of your stock against people who are prepared to buy it, etc., etc. Could I twist your arm and ask you to come back on and talk about that?
Absolutely so. It'd be a pleasure to do so.
Great. So, Dr. Don Harradine, I thank you on behalf of everybody who is listening to the Money Talks that we're doing. They're very, very interesting. They've got a good following. Lots of people are downloading them. You should be proud of what you've done. And I cannot thank you enough for giving so generously of your time and your genuinely valuable time. Thank you very much indeed, Dr. Don Harradine.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.